Welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First World Radio Network. A growing number of people are coming to the realization that we're not alone in this universe. In fact, there have been beings watching over and influencing the history of this planet for a very, very long time. And in my opinion, one person who knows just about more than anyone else on the planet, it's our guest of honor every broadcast. It's Michael in Maui. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
Life treating you well in the wonderful state of Hawaii today?
Yeah, it's been nice here. A little windy today, but still very nice.
Well, it's, you know, do you think your attitude about life would be different if you lived, you know, somewhere like, I don't know, above the Arctic Circle?
Definitely.
You know, I wonder how sometimes those Inuits get up every morning. What's the weather like today? Cold. So what's been happening in the world today that we need to know about? Anything?
Well, there's a lot of this different things. As far as there being something to do with that concerning with the overall solar system in which we are at, maybe. I don't know. But seems to be that it's following a progression which was shown, and that there are lots of volcanic activity continuing to move around the world and make their presence known. And our sun, of course, is somewhat of an influence. But the influence, I believe, is more than gravitational. It has a lot more to do with magnetic and that type of energetics. And interestingly enough, our sun as well as our planet seems to be moving into a, instead of a bipolar magnet, like a bar magnet, you have a north and a south pole. Our sun seems to be moving in a quadrupolar type of arrangement where we have multiple poles, specifically one near the equator.
How is that possible?
Excuse me?
How is that even possible? Is that, is
well,
that accepted?
Well, the sun, of course, generates a magnetic field that flips every 11 years, 11 and a half years, in conjunction with its sunspot cycle. And that is due to a very ancient legacy of its origin, which has to do with the sun's electromotive makeup, its currents that have been milling around in the sun from its earliest origin. Now, the sun, of course, is a sphere of semi-liquid plasma and various, even a solid form of material, but it is in motion and creating an electromotive field which tends to change or move every 11 and a half years. But in this movement, we can generate not only a distinct flip in its poles, but multiple poles. So in this flip we're seeing right now, it is generating a quadrupolar design. It is the scientists in the National Astronomical Observatory of Japan has noted that it seems to be moving in that direction right now. And our planet also seems to be moving in a much, that direction, except in a much slower arrangement because we're a lot more solid and less dynamic than the sun because of our geosphere, our crustal movement is much slower. But internally, we do have similar currents, similar to convection currents, but not exactly. They have similar currents to the sun, which have electromotive power. So we do have what some people call the salt anomaly, but that is another pole that, of course, is a sign that we are moving toward a, you know, some kind of a shift movement or a flip in terms of in terms of a magnetic flip. And the problem with a magnetic flip is that's when our shields drop. And when they flip, the shields drop, and depending on how long it lasts,
it's
open to our sun's activity. Now, if they somehow coordinate themselves in a way that as our planet's flip coincides with the sun's flip in this year, we're going to be wide open to some of the strangest and most active coronal mass ejections the sun has been giving for a while. So that leaves us wide open.
So let's say if a pole shifts and our shields are down, just like on Star Trek, our shields are down. Then, just start thinking of the possibilities. What if it was only days? Well, we probably would have millions of cases of skin cancer just from people being exposed to the UV rays, perhaps. Or what if it was
More charged particles than the UV.
Well, what if it destroyed, what if it was a week or a month and an entire continent's growing season was fried?
Yeah, exactly.
Oops.
You'd have crop failure, famine, these kinds of things can happen. And because of the unusual activity in the sun, which to me is a great influence on our planetary weather patterns, we're looking at it right now, I'm looking at it right now, in terms of the evidence, in terms of the numerous volcanic activities that are just sprouting up in conjunction with the timing of this activity with the magnetic poles. These are the things that have been warned about, but to watch out for, and watching them. And of course, our celestial friends have been at one time very busy trying to keep the sun calm, but eventually they will let loose, they'll let it go. And when that happens, we should have been made as ready as possible for it in terms of how they would prepare our consciousness for readiness. And that was essentially to look up, to have a cosmic consciousness, a consciousness toward their way of operating, which would allow for many things, including a type of rescue mission.
You know, we asked our listeners last week on a follow-up as to whether Riley had made any firm time predictions on things that he thought might be happening. And great longtime listener Jim Borth wrote us the following email. Riley has not yet given his long-awaited predictions. He's always said he'll do that near his birthday of this year, which is May 9th. He's scheduled for a show on May 8th and 9th, so we can expect him to reveal all then. I can upload it for you to my Dropbox if you want to hear it. So perhaps he will have something to say. That's only a couple of weeks away.
Yeah, that's true. And Riley has been able to get some information that wasn't really sent to me. I would pay attention whatever he says, especially with the other things which are being pointed out to me. At least make known to the audience that we're heading into a not so safe period right now.
Well, while I have this email open, I just wanted to read another comment that Jim made. It says, on another unrelated note, Z-Man, you've commented that when you sometimes pass lights, they go out. I walk my dog before sunrise, and frequently I experience this as well. Sometimes the lights go on instead. It doesn't happen frequently, though, but sometimes it happens in bunches. Within the past couple of months or so, when we went past light 3 days in a row, where they'd either go on or off depending on which state they were in and which direction we approached. It was just one light. It wasn't one light either. Either I or my dog is haunted. Jim, Corey King can relate this to you. In the past 2 weeks, I've had about seven of those experiences. Three on one trip to the pizza shop and back for the radio station. Three on one direction. And the one light that I pulled up, as I was pulling up to a red light, the light above me goes off. And coming back the other direction from picking up the pizza, as I went under, it came back on. Okay, it could be totally coincidental, and I'm not saying anything otherwise, but I noticed these things. Michael, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, one of the interesting things that these photo detectors that are used in turning on and off those street lights is that they are able to detect light that is not within our visual spectrum. An example would be infrared, ultraviolet, the extreme ends of the visual spectrum, electromagnetic activity. Again, it gets into that type of electromagnetic activity. Of course, when it comes down to electromagnetic waves, they also can be influenced by electromagnetic waves which are not really within the light spectrum. It indicates, and it has always indicated, that there are many times a entity that is associated with a person. Now, depending upon the personality, this entity has a responsibility that follows an individual around through his life. And the Urantia book calls it a seraphic guardian, common name, guardian angel. However, they are termed as many times invisible, can be made visible, and or can become visible, but also have an ability to influence the material realm. Sometimes not to their on purpose. Other indications have been there. Some people have encountered UFOs, and of course, all of their cars, their radio, everything stops, which is a much more different influence. But a similar influence has been with those who have seraphic guardians, that it has this sort of a spooky thing that happens when they're around. Similar occurrence can be if these are not guardians, but the bad guys, essentially the naughty guys. But most of the time in our present world today, these guys have been cleaned out more and more. So most of the time, these are good guys that just have a sort of spooky effect on some things.
Well, you know, on things like this, I remember one day I get up late at night and I'm using the restroom and I look out the window and I look up the street at a streetlight. There's a corner about four houses up from my home. And just as I glance out, I look at the streetlight, and while I'm staring at it, it goes out. Now, I look at that streetlight every day. It hasn't been fixed. It wasn't a defective bulb that's been going out on a regular basis. At that one time, at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning when I stared at it, it went out. Now, okay, there could be lots of reasons. I don't know. Things you said or other, who knows? I'm just telling you what happened. I wish I knew if it was. It could be total coincidence.
Well, a lot of times it may seem that way, but what's the reason? Is it by habit that you like to look at that streetlight?
Well, because of the way my bathroom window is on a second floor and what it opens up to, you know, as much as you can see out of it, you can clearly see the streetlight that overhangs the intersection up at the top of my street, about, I don't know, 100 yards up the street. So it's the predominant feature on the top of the hill. It's, you know,
I don't know,
it's kind of like looking at a campfire at night. Your eyes are kind of attracted to the light, you know?
Yeah, I see. Well, it could be anything in that sense, but there are the other, like I was mentioning at one time, when there are people who are being essentially groomed into or inducted into a group of special individuals who will have better acuity, more acute sense of awareness about some of the methods in which some of these entities are able to communicate. They won't necessarily have the ability of the exact telepathic channel of communication. So sometimes they want you to notice them and know that you cannot notice them, so they make you notice something else. When they see that you apparently are in tune with their suggestions, then if they are your guardians, they'll continue to try to make this more apparent until you develop a better communications, until you kind of like actually can understand and know them. And this becomes a more dynamic association, and you actually become a much more empowered individual. This is not uncommon among the religious community, those who have the supposed many different things, various types of gifts, but these are not associated with the individual or the religious person, or religious leader who performs maybe different forms of prayer-related activity, which results in, answers to prayer. But these things are known to, of course, be functional with an outside entity functioning. And that is sometimes an indication that this entity is working with you, wants to work with you, and you're nearing a point where they may be assigned to you directly.
Probably scare the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Tony Kay, company president, has written a note to you that says, Michael, would advanced alien races actually care or be bothered if a few billion humans died due to the sun's effect, even if alien intervention could hinder the negative consequences?
One of the things that is very important about our planet is not so much the individuals or the millions of individual people that are alive right now, but the actual mechanism, the life origin of our planet was to create this gateway of life ascension. And basically, if a few thousand people do fall away, or even in the millions, it is something that they can, as far as I understand and have been with these celestials, are able to capture their soul, which is the most important thing. But if the soul generation, the property that we have on our planet, which is able to populate the universe with sentient beings of finite and mortal origin, able to ascend a destiny ladder toward eternal life, eternal destiny, it would be a sad thing if that ever stopped, because this is what our planet was all about. And that is something they protect in terms of a more general sense. But each individual is extremely precious, and that's why they have enough, well, they have not necessarily enough, but they have quite a few seraphic individuals, guardians that come around to help select individuals in their task and in their promoting of one form of guidance or another in terms of keeping the planet alive. But during such an event where massive amount of death, there is a type of harvest that goes on with souls that have been suddenly lost. Such as there were some very unique things that were seen in terms of the after effects directly after Hiroshima. Some very strange flickering, flashing lights that were running around, and these lost souls were slowly being gathered up.
Listeners, if you have a question or comment for us, send it to us at dj@artistfirst.com, and we'll read it on this program or as soon as we can get to it. Longtime listener Nadim has sent us an email, and it reads the following. I've been listening to Riley and Michael for the past 6 years, and a wasp just landed on my forehead. That was me, folks. Well, that was pretty cool. Didn't sting me. Let me start over. I've been listening to the Riley and Michael show for the past 6 years, and the information load has grown to be so immense and overwhelming. I wanted to start a project on transcribing some of the shows on Hello Earth and Artist First for listeners. But lately I feel that it would be best to create an online forum that could connect all of this information into one general area so that if we listeners can go and also interact and ask questions. Other listeners could also help with the transcribing of the most important shows on Project Urantia and Hello Earth. A forum could really help and expand this information to a lot of new listeners and individuals and help share our experiences with traversing the seven psychic circles. If such a forum was created, would Michael be willing to visit and expand on certain topics and questions? Michael, your answer.
Sure. That is essentially the image that was presented to me in terms of when I approached Z-Man years ago under the pressure of my guardians to, you know, see if that would be an open gateway. And then it became a gateway. And then it became an extremely powerful gateway. I haven't, for a while, been requested to actually have some of the Celestials answer questions directly. But it's something that is also available in the realm of this active, real-time occurrence of the show. But having the historic stuff and all of that documented in it would be really helpful because it's foundational. There's things that have been laid down earlier that hopefully are understood, but many times are not understood, but it's already mentioned.
Well, last night, I don't get to watch much TV lately. My schedule's pretty. I go home, I go directly to bed. I watched two programs on the Science Channel last night. And, of course, you know, here we are in 2012. It's April of 2012. We're approaching December of 2012. And two more brand new television programs have come out on the Science Channel that are either related to aliens or end times. This is okay. Is that, and on that topic alone, is this just the media jumping on the Y2K bandwagon? This type of, well, that's what's popular, so let's make shows about it. Or some folks might think that they're trying to acclimate us to all of these new ideas. And one of the shows last night was called NASA Unexplained Mysteries. And they went through, chronologically speaking, from John Glenn's first orbit of the Earth up through, you know, recent shuttle launches before that program ended. And they went through astronaut after film after film, and virtually every mission we've gone on in space, they astronauts have seen things and filmed things, and they cover it up. And most of the astronauts are going, look, it's aliens, come on. Story Musgrave especially. And I was surprised because if you watch that program, if it was a court of law that this was being presented in, you would, I believe most jurors would vote, hey, alien craft are shadowing everything we put up in space with people in it, and maybe stuff that doesn't have people in it. What are your thoughts, Mike?
Well, yeah, this it's been things that, as far as trying to keep those things under cover, is since, you know, how the public reaction has been from the 50s on. This is something that they want to keep under wraps, or so that they're protecting funding and other things that are important in terms of what they need to discover. We're not supposed to go discover the celestial community, the kingdom of heaven, you might say. the reality of celestials, supposed to go and discover space and all kinds of stuff and other projects, I guess, perhaps, that are there. But in any case, I see the same thing. I see how they have been trying to ignore some of these events. But they have apparently not been as successful in covering them up as they'd like to be.
Well, it's impossible. When one instance they're talking to, I forget, it was a two-man crew, and it was in the early days. It was the second or third generation before Apollo. And they're looking out the window, and the guy's going, "Hey, there's things out there."
Yeah.
And the guys from Houston are saying, "Oh, it's just your jettisoned last booster rocket that's jettisoned. It's floating downward." He goes, "Nope, I'm looking at that. There's things up here." And it's recorded, and there's the astronaut saying, "Nope, I'm looking at the booster, Houston. There's things up here." So
I remember that one being pointed out. I didn't see it recently, but I do remember that commentary that went on.
The astronaut specifically debunks it right there on the transmission. Oops, kind of hard to cover that one up. And it's, you know, of course, I was surprised that they got so many actual NASA footage tapes onto that program and the actual, you know, calls from the on the radio. Boy. And then what they do, and I feel so sorry for this poor guy, they drag out some poor guy that tries to say, "Oh, I can debunk this," and tries to come up with some silly explanation that no one really believes, but I don't know. I guess somebody's paying him or that's his job to give a opposing point of view or something, but it's sad because the explanations are so juvenile and look so stupid, and I don't know anybody with an IQ over 50 that would go for any of that stuff, but yet they do present it, so maybe they feel it's in the interest of journalism to present the other argument. I don't know. But that guy looked pretty silly in the face of this in-your-face evidence right there that you can see. You know, clear film, clear photographs, clear radio transmissions, and then somebody tries to change it around for whatever motivation. But, well, equally fascinating, I only got to watch 2 hours of TV before I fell asleep last night, was a program called, I don't know what it was called. It was on the Science Channel, but the premise of it was, it was fiction, but the idea of it would be, what if the SETI program tomorrow actually got a signal? Unequivocal signal. And then what would happen? And then it followed a timeline of about a year, perhaps, between the time an alien space race contacted us and in this mythical, this fictional tailing, they sent us back words from the Voyager spacecraft that we sent out there. Remember, it has the golden record on it?
Yeah, right.
And the aliens picked three phrases, which they sent back to us as a transmission saying something along the lines, I don't know, "We're on our way." And then the world knew that they were on their way. And then it took, you know, like another 6 months or a year for them to arrive. And, of course, you know, this was an interesting story. It's total fiction. But, you know, then they can see it out near Saturn, this massive 1,000-mile-across solar sail craft coming your way. And the towing behind it, they said, three times the size of Los Angeles. Anyway, it was interesting mind game to play because they started to show what would happen in society according to the people that wrote this. And I think a lot of it was true, things that you wouldn't normally think about when we talk about these topics, like somebody immediately taking off their wedding ring and going, "This is the end of the world. I'm not going to spend it with you, or I'm not working anymore. You know, this, everything's going to change. I quit. I don't want to do my job, or I don't want to, or I sell all my stocks, or I don't." You know, the social ramifications of what's going to happen when we absolutely know for certain that aliens are on their way. And I just thought the whole show was utterly fascinating to see how some of society begins to break down long before the first alien ever sets foot on the planet. Your thoughts, Michael?
Oh, well, that's, do you have any idea what Project Urantia is all about? It has something to do with a shift in consciousness, a adaptability of the individuals ahead of the game who will not react in that manner. and essentially keep have the explanation there. This is just part of the overall enlightenment program that is continuing on our planet, so that when that does happen, there will be enough explanation out there so as to disallow perhaps a complete failure of society into chaos, because more and more we are really being enlightened to the fact that we're not alone. So the idea and the fear of those who have a dread, those of power, minions, who want to maintain their control, their grit, power grid of control over humanity, they're the ones that really realize that they're going to lose it. And they're the ones who have the resources in which to finance many kinds of fear propaganda that they want to continue to sow into the populace, so that they can continue to maintain their power structure. And on the other hand, the Celestials themselves have prepared individuals such as Riley and myself and many others to come forward with the greater truth and a greater understanding. It's not only falling into the hands of English-speaking individuals. These go into other areas of the world where, you know, they have other individuals that are coming forward with more knowledge. And some just simply tie to an ancient. The Hindus, interesting in India, they just go, yeah, that's the way it was. We know all about those things.
And yeah, so, exactly. That's what we've been telling you for 5,000 years, yeah. Morons. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I just found the, you know, because I always think about the philosophical, the religious, the civilization change, all those grandiose ideas that happens with alien contact. And I thought it was interesting how the authors of this fictitious program focused a lot on what the effects on the average person would be. You know, the day-to-day, you know, whether you were religious or not, whether you were, you know, regarding your nationality, if you knew, if the government announced on December 21st, we've seen a craft that's on its way. It's going to be here on December 21st. We're calculating its trajectory and time. They're going to be here on December 21st. Would you get up and go to work tomorrow? I don't know. I probably would. But, you know, anyway, that to know the exact date and time, that was kind of cool that they, you know, that the world had time to prepare. I just found it a very interesting intellectual, you know, puzzle to ponder with such a proposition like that. I found that fascinating.
Yeah, well, anyway, our planetary consciousness is scheduled for a slight, maybe more than a slight change and a readjustment, I guess, and an overall planetary attitude adjustment going on, will be going on, and something that a lot of us already prepared for, so it won't be much of an attitude adjustment, but for some people it will be extreme. Because they've discounted many things in their lives and have led their lives in accordance with their supposed notions on, you know, what was needed to be. And because of the limits of our mortal lives, and because of that, the way they structure lives, and because of that, the society is able to manipulate and market and distill ideas and a paradigm of society into society through, you know, different means, mostly types of propaganda, I believe. The powerful ones eventually will come to a point where the great flyby, the one that was shown to me that was going to come, or will be coming, it's actually a program of increasing sightings that will continue to increase. And people will blame them on many things, including, like, everybody's carrying cell phones capable of taking video and stuff that will be capturing more and more of these. It may be true, but because of it, an increasing number of very good sightings, until there will be our little armadas that will be verifying the existence, which will help reattune our consciousness, understand global consciousness, to we're not alone. We're just one additional planet in this entire, let's say, universe of planets, and within a local universe of the Milky Way universe is just another one of the many within our planetary system. I mean, within our galactic system of the Milky Way.
You know, I wonder that the fact of watching that, I've just sort of come to a realization. If the Celestials announced in advance when they were coming, then you might have the situations that presented themselves in that fiction movie last night. You know, it would certainly to some degree, you know, remains to be seen to what degree, but it would certainly be massively have an effect on society. So maybe they don't, you know, of course, it seems to me maybe a lot more logical approach is what they're doing. They're slowly, gradually, like Tony would say, cooking a frog in a pot. You just make the water hotter. You know, they're slowly indoctrinating us instead of announcing we're going to be there, you know, January 1st. It seems like a way to keep society intact, maybe, so that when they get here, we already haven't disintegrated ourselves.
Yeah. Well, initially it was for our society to make certain types of leaps of changes in terms of our civilization, and when the latest one being our technological leaps, you know, industrial age, telecommunications age, computer age, moving on into more and more medical age, you know, extending life and things like that, and just our knowledge coming up to a point of being well able. This is something that was pointed out to me in my, you know, being invited to be with the Celestials. We got invited by Neil. I said, you want to come with us and then see how things work with us? Well, I thought I was going to learn all kinds of technology and stuff, but I did keep my mind in that modality and trying to figure out what they were, while things were working there, literally. But then what was pointed out to me that soon many of the things that I was wondering about and marveling about that were operational in the New Jerusalem grand architectural sphere out there that is orbiting Saturn, is that we will have them here on our planet shortly. It didn't take many decades to accomplish, and there's because of that, we are actually coming to a time when we won't get very surprised at being able to adapt into the celestial society, and many of those who will by invite, I believe, make their way into the domain of the New Jerusalem, which has the capability of housing many millions and millions of people up there. It's huge. And go through a re-education process. Educating here, we learn a lot of stuff here, but for a cosmic conscious idea, understanding the entire functioning of the universe, there's a lot more that can be learned in as much as, you know, a very short trip for myself filled me with all kinds of knowledge and understanding and realization of how the universe operates, the universe of sentient beings, the universe of physical beings as well as non-material. These are an amazing education that many will be afforded in a short time. I believe it's not going to be long before that happens. And of course, with that education, many of these people who retain their physical mortal structure can be returned to our planet with that knowledge in mind, such as in the same way that I have. And I'm an example of someone being enlightened in a sense in all of these things and still able to function in society, not go off on some crazy tangent yelling in the middle of the street. We're being, you know, the sky is falling or something.
Yeah. Isn't it hard? You know, so many folks are so oblivious to anything happening in the world around them. And folks like us, we sort of talk in different, you know, things that interest us and our reasons for living seem a little different. Isn't it hard sometimes to be constantly, as I am and many of the people on that work here at the station, many people think we are just freaking nuts, dude. I mean, we're kooks. We have to be unbalanced upstairs. How can we be so gullible? And, I don't feel that way at all, but I don't know. Does it ever affect you the way sometimes people treat folks like us?
Well, it depends upon their position. Many times they want to feel nice and cozy in terms of their habitation, whether it be a real physical habitation or a place in which they're domiciled in terms of their understanding of the planet, and their understanding of what is real, which has been one of the most fundamental of all philosophic questions. What is real? And to discount other people's experiences is only a way of coping with a lack of ability to really absorb the totality of reality. And that is what many times we are unable to explain or to absorb. Yet the totality of reality is one of the things that was explored together with celestials up there in that environment of learning in the New Jerusalem city that's in space, the grand mothership, that would be what Riley called it, but it's kind of a small word, mothership, tiny little thing. It's really much more than that. And expansion of understanding of the totality of reality, including much of what's confirmed as real with me in terms of just experiencing it, was the exposure to something that we have here on our planet. And of course, that is the availability of a Urantia book. The Urantia book, of course, is limited. It has its limits. But I've used the Urantia book in terms of being able to classify the various things that have I experienced with them. And I have used it because it was explained as one of the better sources of information that our planet has, the Urantia book. The Bible, which I mentioned first of all, which helps to explain some of the things going on with them, was acknowledged as one of the books, but it wasn't what he was talking about as far as pointing it out. So I guess when it comes right down to it, the idea of this understanding, if you come into looking or studying something, stroll down the Urantia book lane and see what happens in terms of finding something in there that you want to discover. Nicely classified and nicely organized. But as I said, for me it has been used in a different way, one in which was able to help me classify different beings, different entities, different organizations and assemblies of structures even, and realities that were exposed to me. Even a good old question as a Urantia companion as classified within the pages of this book.
I got to get that book. Now my buddy has a copy. He promised to drop it off.
You don't need the book. I hardly really read that book.
I just want to go
on the internet and I look at some of the text as well as listen to some of the audio that's there at urantiabook.org, I believe.
Excellent. Yeah, and I find that, with such a busy lifestyle, I like listening to books when I drive. Yeah. Well, it's a great time to that snow phone calls, and as long as you keep your eyes on the road, it's a great way to absorb information. Well, we've got several more emails. Let's try to squeeze these in. Here's our listeners are on it, folks. Here's an email from Matt Camp in Orrville, Ohio, and he is a truly longtime listener of this station. And he says, so I guarantee this is correct. The Riley Martin special 2012 quote-unquote announcement will be on Tuesday, May 8th at 2012, Sirius 101 at 12 midnight. Dear Michael, please talk about your encounter with friends on magic mushrooms with the spirits that were shown to them / you. Also, how this relates to your DMT brain molecule in contacting the Celestials in 2012. Thank you, Matt, in Orrville, Ohio.
Oh, yeah, those guys were went hunting up in the mountains to get these mushrooms. And they wanted to have fun and experience it. And two guys, and both of them are intelligent college students at the time. They remain to be positive contributors to society, so the magic mushrooms didn't destroy them. But it was interesting because one of them couldn't look at me. Another one was amazed at looking at me. It was like, oh, since, you know, that I was glowing with a light when I, you know, popped into the room, said hello to those guys. And it's like,
yeah,
you're like glowing. You're glowing. Hey, you're glowing, man. You're glowing.
That's because you're on acid, you moron.
They could see it. And the other guy says, no, he's not. He's glowing. Can't glow. He's glowing. But apparently it turned them into something they could see, I guess. But anyway, it was funny. But anyway, I was looking, what? I'm not glowing. I kept looking myself, you know. But anyway, that was one of the interesting things that they said. And it didn't last very long because, you know,
So you've never tried hallucinogenic mushrooms in your lifetime?
No, I never did.
I shouldn't be asking you these questions.
I went over there and looked at their pan. It was completely empty. They ate everything.
I will admit, in college back in 78, I tried some and absolutely nothing happened.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Like eating a
maybe
mushroom on
same,
your salad.
Same type.
Yeah, nothing happened at all.
Yeah. Well, these guys knew exactly what they were looking for, and they found it, and they cooked it up. It sure smelled good.
Well, mushrooms are always good.
Yeah.
And they're good for you. Brought to you by your Mushroom Growers Council. here's one from Tangent Juan, another longtime listener. Hi, Z-Man. Please have Mr. J. Widener, W-E-I-D-N-E-R, Widener, on Artist First Radio in May with Michael to speak about the planet Saturn. Excuse me. By the way, his website is jwidener.com. And one following question, why is Saturn called the Master of Time and 2012? You ever heard of that?
Well, yeah, I did hear of that. But one of the interesting things that was pointed out to me was that in terms of many of the people who will encounter celestials, they will have disruptions in the perception of time and space. Because one of the things that I was made aware of was that they had a understanding of using space in a different way that we just simply maneuver ourselves in space. And because of that, our equilibrium, you might say, you know, like it might be something akin to like we go on solid land and we are akin to that. Our body is akin to that, and we kind of know how to balance. And as soon as we get on a boat, we get seasick. You know, we get all, our inner ear gets all challenged, and we get seasick. So similar type of sickness can happen in terms of the motion of time and space. So that happens with some of the craft, but it also is a good reason to place much of their activity way out there in Saturn And Saturn has been perhaps there, at least their influence has been influencing individuals for at least a couple thousand years, probably longer. But because I've seen some of the way the Egyptians have kind of like immortalized some of the things that I saw there, which was the way their caskets were made. You know, they look almost similar to the idea of what I was able to see in terms of the life chambers. The scarab beetle being very similar to the idea of what I saw was this big bug-like animal, which is like cleaning, which Riley also described, which goes around cleaning and repairing the structure, basically cleaning up after me. That's the way it was put to me. What is needed to clean? Over here so clean, it says, they're pointing at me.
It's you, man.
Because of you.
One final email we'll squeeze in from Chaka. First of all, Chaka, I'm not going to Maui in 2012. I got to be around here in case crap happens. I got a family. But privately, that's a message to Chaka. What I can say publicly is his email that says, well, I don't know if Chaka is a male or female. At any rate, let's have Riley on Artist First Live with Michael, Curtis Cooperman, Eron, and Nancy Leader Tuesday, May 8th from 8 to 10 p.m. and quote-unquote, stick it to Howard Stern and Sirius Radio. I like the way you think, Chaka. Maybe we'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great if we could get all of those people together in one broadcast?
Yeah, it would be very interesting.
Wouldn't that be?
Yeah. Well,
we're going to work on that, Chaka. That's a great idea. I like that suggestion.
I know Curtis has been visiting Riley, dropped off a whole bunch of books at his home. Thousands of copies. So, yeah, it's been in touch, I guess, more than in touch.
That's good, folks. We know that there were some squabbles there, and it's great to get... People should always mend bridges. Life's too short to be angry with each other, and it's all a bunch of petty differences in this lifetime, isn't it? I thought the quotation, as much as I dislike Ron Reagan, I thought his quotation that they showed on that NASA program we talked about earlier, when he was at the United Nations, I think it was 1986 perhaps, and he says in front of the UN to all those delegates, he says, and I'm paraphrasing, but wouldn't all of our troubles in the world seem so petty if all of a sudden we were faced with aliens or, you know, a threat from outer space? And how true is that? You know, all of a sudden, and I thought that program that I watched last night was so riveting on how people's focus changed from what is so important today, American Idol, who's on Dancing with the Stars, all the stupid stuff we deal with every day, how everything changes, could change in the blink of an eye. If tomorrow they said, guess what? This is the way, this is what's going to happen. It's fascinating. You know, I wonder if other periods of history have ever had a instance where it was simply a light switch. You might say that when Krakatoa exploded or, a great natural event that changed everybody's lives all around the world. When the Chicxulub, wasn't that where the meteor hit out in the Gulf of Mexico? Or, there have been times when the whole consciousness of every human alive was changed virtually overnight. I wonder when the last time that was. Anyway, it's interesting to it's fun for the brain. Keeps us exercising our brains, right? Well, we are at the top of the hour, and I always want to save time to mention during all these broadcasts, if I can find the theme music, start running it. There we go. Michael does this show because he told his celestial friends he would do this show. He's fulfilling his word to his celestial friends. Artist First does this show because we want to. We do not accept paid advertising on this program. None of us have anything to sell. We do this program because we want to get this information out there and let you, the listener, decide what's going on. Michael, as always, we truly thank you. From all the over 100,000 listeners a week that tune into this program, we sincerely thank you for your time and expertise.
Certainly welcome, and I always look forward to doing this show, too.
Well, Chaka, I'm going to do my best to line up every guest you mentioned on that thing and see if we can't get those folks to come on May 8th. Hey, I've been rejected by all my ex-wives. They can say no to me, too. So what's the difference, right? We'll find out, and we'll let you know perhaps by next week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Artie Kornfeld broadcast is coming on with Michael Lang. In fact, it's the only recorded interview with Michael Lang and Artie Kornfeld talking about Woodstock since 1969. That's coming your way after the CBS News on Artist First Radio.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path?